My name's Jay Butera, and I'm here today to speak with you as a concerned citizen, as a father of four children. Also, as a business person, I have lived all my life in this area, built three businesses in this area. So I know what it's like to look at an electric bill, both as a business person, as a manufacturer, and as an individual citizen. So what I want to share with you today is some thoughts that I have on how we look at pollution, because to me this seems really fundamental in what we're talking about. I went to school not too far from here in Haverford, Pennsylvania. To get to school every day, I had to drive through this industrial zone with all kinds of plants belching pollution. At that time, pollution was a little more in your face. You could smell it. And we had to roll up the windows to our car as we drove through these plants. Now, at the age of 12, in sixth grade, something occurred to me. I was having trouble breathing. And this is what I was looking at as I drove to school every day, just a couple miles from my house. And something went off in my mind, this concept of, you know, this is the air that we're breathing, and we should not be putting this into the air. And once you realize that, once that occurs to you, it's something you never forget. And so I really believe that the fact that we go around in our lives these days and drive past factories and power plants that are spewing toxins into the air, it's just not acceptable. You know, we should not become hardened to the fact that this is reality, particularly today, because we have technologies to clean this before it comes into our atmosphere, and we have technologies to make energy without even combusting fossil fuels. So I learned at that age, air is so precious that we need to absolutely not use it as a toxic dumping ground. I live by this: my liberty ends where yours begins. It sort of means that I can do whatever I want as long as it doesn't impact you. Well, these people burning coal are impacting me, and I've lived with that all my life. We have regulations to regulate all kinds of things that need to be. This is a few miles, well, maybe a mile from here on South Street. You get a fine if you play your radio too loud. We have fines if you drop a candy wrapper on the ground. We have fines. But this is okay. This is free for a lot of industry, and I don't think that should be the case. I want us to change our mindset on that and not accept it. I don't accept that to flip a light switch, we need to burn coal. And how do I know that? I know that because since 1991, I've been living on solar power right in Gladwin, Pennsylvania, about 20 miles from here. This is my house installing the solar panels. We have 5 kilowatts of photovoltaics on the roof. Now, Administrator Jackson has said that the proposed rules might cost $3 to $4 per household. That's cheap. Now, if you break that down, if you figure most houses have 3 or 4 people, it comes to a dollar per person per month. There's that dollar. And I want to show you this. That's the prescription I picked up yesterday for my asthma medication, $140.97. That's a 30-day supply. That's what I paid. That's $140.97. I counted it myself. And I do that every month. So the dollar per person per month is absolutely offset by all kinds of health care costs. Your research shows that, and I urge you to consider that. You know, some things are priceless. When I remember when seatbelts were coming into cars, the auto companies were saying, this will kill our industry. It's too expensive. It will hurt sales. Well, does anyone think that seatbelts weren't a good idea? Absolutely not. There are some things that just don't have a price that we have to protect. And I think there are those personal liberties that I talked about, clean air, clean water, and our children's future. And by implementing this rule and making it stick hard, you can help protect all of those things. It saves lives, saves money, improves health, and creates jobs. And I don't see where anyone can argue what part of that isn't just wonderful. And you know, it's not just for people when you do this. It's for every living creature on earth, in the sea. And so I'd urge you to think about them too. Thank you very much for considering my comments.
Thank you. And as far as the slides, if you want to give us or send us copies of the slides, we can arrange to enter those into the docket also.
That's great. I'd be glad to. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, next we have Reverend Mitchell Hescox from the Evangelical Environmental Network and Leslie G. Fields from Sierra Club. Please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Mitch Hescox, and I am the Reverend Mitch Hescox, president of the Evangelical Environmental Network. It was a group founded in 1993 and dedicated to helping others understand that creation care is a matter of life. And I am also a resident of New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Christians are called to protect life. It's sacred. And for most of us evangelicals, that includes the unborn. We take very seriously the biblical belief that life begins at conception. As God knits us together, as the psalmist says, "For you have formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb." The unborn are the weakest members of our society. We must protect them and ensure their right to an abundant life. We already lose 1.2 million unborn children in the United States to the painful choice of abortion each year. But few realize that we jeopardize another 700,000 unborn children to the neurological damage from mercury poisoning. As you've heard often today, one in six babies is born with harmful levels of mercury in their blood. And coal-burning power plants are the largest source of domestic mercury pollution. Mercury is extremely toxic to the brain, the nervous system, and especially to the developing brain of the unborn child. Simply consuming mercury-contaminated fish during pregnancy exposes the unborn. Eating fish should be healthy. It's filled with lots of omega-3s and other healthy nutrients, and it should be encouraged. But in our nation, most physicians recommend and consuming only one serving of mercury per week, of fish per week, because the mercury accumulates in that unborn brain, causing developmental disabilities, resulting in lowered intelligence and learning problems. This has lifetime implications. One study found that the resulting loss of intelligence diminishes economic productivity that persists over the entire lifetime of these children. We are hindering a children from an abundant life and pursuit of their American dreams because we failed to clean up this terrible poison. Jesus said, "Do not hinder the children. Let them come to me." 20 years worth of inaction by the EPA, Congress, and the utility industry is far too long. In our tradition and many other traditions, children are special. Indeed, all life is sacred. We have waited since the amended 1990 Clean Air Act, signed into law by President George H.W. Bush, for mercury protection for the unborn to be instituted. Some here today will claim that EPA is acting too quickly and more time is needed. But I ask you, how many lives have been hindered by our inaction to limit our unborn children's exposure to this threat? One child hindered from reaching his or her fullest potential because of our sinful inaction is too many. Last May, in 2001, I walked over 300 miles from West Virginia to Washington, D.C. as part of an event we called the Creation Care Walk. I traversed areas of mountaintop removal and then some of the most beautiful landscapes God created in the eastern United States, rural towns, cities, and suburbs. However, the most horrific signs along the way were the mercury fish advisories posted along so many of our streams and rivers. Mercury contaminates 6 million acres of freshwater lakes, 46,000 miles of streams, and 22,000 wetland acres. Much of our fresh water in every corner of America contains dangerous mercury levels. In fact, every state has some type of fish consumption advisory, including the recommendation for pregnant women not to eat any locally caught fish. Just 3 weeks ago, my family and I had an outing to Valley Forge National Park. My daughter-in-law is a photographer, and as she passed the covered bridge there, she sort of demanded that we stop for a photo. We walked around the bridge, and there was a sign posted right along the stream bank. Attention all fishermen, no fish may be killed or held in possession from this stream. Just 30 feet away, a man was fishing. Returning home, we learned that mercury and PCBs were what contaminated that stream. In another story, I met with a pastor from York County who shared how his family depended upon locally caught fish as a source of protein. He no longer can fish, is afraid to fish because of mercury in the streams. I'm running out of time here today, but quickly I would tell you and say that we know and believe that the costs are not a problem. Our calculations are a little higher than EPA's, and we estimate a maximum average cost of $7. We also know that mercury is transported from other areas, other nations, but clearly much of our country is influenced by our own domestic sources. And while we admit we have no control over what China does, it would be foolish, as my mother said, for two wrongs to make a right. We cannot clean up our act and take responsibility for who we are unless we do what's right. We can, as some would say, depend on China to protect our unborn children. The Evangelical Environmental Network strongly supports the adoption of this rule, that you not weaken it and it go forward as plans. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Fields.
Good morning. My name's Leslie Fields. I'm the Environmental Justice and Community Partnerships Director for the Sierra Club. I'm based in Washington, D.C., and I'm very appreciative of this opportunity to be here this morning. And we're very appreciative of this opportunity that Administrator Jackson and the EPA proposing clean air standards that have been delayed to protect our nation's communities from the threats of toxic air pollution produced by power plants, since no national standards exist to protect communities from the toxic air pollution, even though power plants are the largest sources of toxic air emissions. And Sierra Club has been encouraged by all the action of this administration on environmental justice. And to this end, although we appreciate this opportunity to testify today, I would like to also state, and to the also the hearings that are going to occur in Chicago and Atlanta this week, three hearings west of the Mississippi is simply not enough. Other hearings should be scheduled, for example, in Texas and tribal communities and in the West, so that the aforementioned mandate of environmental justice and equal access to this decision-making process is achieved for this issue. Due to the legacy of discriminatory siting, racism, and economic disempowerment, many people of color, African American communities, Native communities, Latino communities, and others live in neighborhoods that are much higher average exposure to air pollution of every type. Air pollution from dirty coal-fired power plants harms communities of color. Nationwide, 80% of Hispanic Americans and 71% of African Americans live in areas that fail to meet one or more EPA air quality standards, as opposed to 57% of Caucasians. More than 68% of African Americans live within 30 miles of a coal-fired power plant, the distance which the maximum effects of smokestack plumes are expected to occur. In comparison, 56% of whites live in such proximity to a coal-fired power plant. Air pollution from dirty coal-fired power plants harms the health of people of color and low-income populations and vulnerable populations disproportionately. Low-income communities of color have higher rates of asthma than other communities. African-American children have the highest rate of asthma attacks among ethnic groups, and Latino children are 60% more likely to suffer from asthma attacks than white children. Central Harlem, predominantly African-American and immigrant neighborhood in New York City, as many as one in four children have asthma. In Maryland, census tracts with the highest proportion of African-Americans were three times more likely to have a high risk of air pollution-related cancer than tracts of the lowest population. Just south here in Delaware County, the Exelon Eddystone Generating Station emits many, many pounds, almost 80 pounds of air, toxic mercury into the air, according to statistics in 2009. And even though that plant is slated to be closed next year, the decades of air pollution affected more than 230,000 people living within a five-mile radius. The population with a three-mile radius of the Eddystone plant is about 27% people of color. African Americans from 3 to 34 years of age are five times more likely to die of asthma than Caucasians. All this is coupled with the fact that Black and Latino people are less likely to have health insurance and access to treatment and preventive care than Caucasians. As you well know, coal-fired power plants are the main source of mercury emissions and responsible for one-third of the mercury pollution in the U.S. And mercury levels accumulate through the food chain through large carnivorous fish like bass and tuna having heaviest concentrations. Mercury pollution is widespread through U.S. waterways. Currently, as stated earlier, 48 states have fish consumption advisories due to mercury contamination, including 23 states that have issued statewide advisories for all their lakes and rivers. These advisories reflect a serious health effect to recreational anglers, including 1.4 million African Americans who fish recreationally and more likely to eat the fish they catch, Native populations, Latino communities, Asian American communities like the Vietnamese in the Gulf area and other communities and low-income communities who regularly fish as a mainstay of their diet. These fish advisories, although well-intentioned, push the burden of action on the people who are at least blamed for the mercury contamination. These advisories may not contain the information in the relevant language of the local fishing population, such as Vietnamese in the Gulf Coast or in Spanish. These advisories may also be hard to understand for that matter for people who are not literate in English. Such advisories also may become dislodged or damaged by weather or vandals. As a child, I fished in Pymatuning State Park near Erie, Pennsylvania, with my grandparents. My family still fishes every year, every summer. And so we ate everything we caught. We ate the catfish, to the bluegill, to the bass. And it was a huge part of growing up, and it's a huge part of what we do as a family and a community. And so it's, I don't know any community that lives near a body of water, any ethnic group that doesn't fish, or just fish for recreation. Fish is a way of bringing your families together and enjoying being the great outdoors. And so mercury, since it's such a powerful neurotoxin and has exposure to serious health effects for children and developing fetuses. So the remedy really is to reduce emissions. And there's an excellent report I would recommend, the particular related health effects of reducing power plant emissions by APT Associates details reducing emissions from older coal-fired power plants that will alone save 18,000 lives, 3 million lost wake days, and 16 million restricted activity days per year. And I'm sorry I've gone over my time, but I also wanted to just mention that EPA also needs to abide by certain internal interim guidance on considering environmental justice during the development of an action and the framework for cumulative risk assessment in promulgating this rule, and I appreciate this opportunity. And thank you so much again for holding these hearings, and we hope that you'll be able to hold some other ones as well.
Thanks to both of you. The next two witnesses are Paul G. Billings from the American Lung Association and James W. Banford, Jr. from the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. Go ahead, Mr. Billings.
Good morning. I'm Paul Billings. I'm the Vice President of National Policy and Advocacy for the American Lung Association. Before I start, Rob, I want to thank you for all you've done throughout your career at EPA, and everyone in the room know that millions of people breathe easier because of your career protecting public health and the environment. So thank you, Rob.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you for the opportunity to share my views on the mercury and air toxic standards proposal. We appreciate all the time that EPA has provided for public comment. By my count, we will have had 111 days by the July 5th deadline. I will briefly overview the American Lung Association's support for the proposal, and we will also file detailed comments by that deadline. This is a critical public health measure, and the stakes are enormously high. The cleanup of toxic air pollution from oil and coal-fired power plants is long overdue. Congress first required EPA to clean up toxic air pollution from industries in the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990. The electric power companies have successfully delayed having to comply since then. More than 400 coal-fired power plants located in 46 states across the country release in excess of 386,000 tons of hazardous air pollutants into the air each year. The wide range of uncontrolled pollutants from these plants include toxic metals and metal-like substances such as arsenic, lead, and mercury, dioxins, chemicals known or thought to cause cancer, including formaldehyde, benzene, and radioisotopes, and acid gases such as hydrogen chloride. These emissions threaten the health of people who live near these plants, as well as those that live hundreds of miles away. People most at risk of the health effects of breathing these hazardous air pollutants include infants, children, and teenagers. Older adults, pregnant women, people with asthma and other lung diseases, people with cardiovascular disease, diabetics, people with low income, and healthy adults who work or exercise outdoors. This rule is literally a matter of life and death. According to EPA's analysis, In 2016, the implementation of these standards and compliance with this rule will each year result in the prevention of approximately 11,000 heart attacks, 120,000 asthma attacks, 12,000 hospitalizations and emergency room visits, 11,000 fewer cases of acute bronchitis among children, and 17,000 premature deaths. 17,000 premature deaths is an unimaginable sum. Allow me to put this in context. At the University of Pennsylvania, there are just over 10,000 undergraduate students. Together with the 6,400 undergrads at Villanova, they still don't equal the 17,000 people whose lives would be saved each and every year by this rule. The proposed cleanup requirements are based on the pollution reductions achieved by the top 12% of facilities in the country. So no power plant is being asked to achieve reductions that haven't already been achieved. In fact, many power plants have already installed the modern pollution control technologies needed to comply. On Sunday, I read in the Philadelphia Inquirer about the Mercer Generating Station in New Jersey that because of the pollution controls that it already has installed, it is expected to meet the updated standards. Other plants built in the 1950s and 60s have not installed modern pollution controls. Now is the time for all plants to clean up and to operate by the same set of rules. The most widely used and effective controls fall into three groups. Mercury control technology, called activated carbon injection, which also removes arsenic, chromium dioxide, and other compounds. There are technologies that control metals and fine particles, such as baghouses and electrostatic precipitators. And acid gas controls, which target hydrogen chloride, hydrogen fluoride, and they also reduce sulfur dioxide and other gases. These include wet and dry scrubbers and dry sorbent injection. The Clean Air Act gives great flexibility to comply with these standards. Some power companies may decide to switch fuels to get the emission levels down to the updated limits. Others may close down old boilers. They may choose to combine all three approaches, with some boilers adding modern pollution control equipment, switching to cleaner fuels, or shutting one down. Those decisions are up to the individual companies. The companies finally just have to follow the law and meet the standards to start saving lives. In closing, I urge EPA to resist delays. When the comment period on this proposal ends on July 5th, all interested people will have had 111 days to express their views. That is more than enough time to prepare detailed and thorough comments. Further, EPA must meet the deadline of November 16th, 2011 to complete the rule. And most important, EPA should follow the law and make sure that all plants comply with the requirements in 3 years by 2015. Think about it. Children born when Congress debated and passed the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments just completed their junior year at UPenn, Villanova, and universities across the nation. This rule must be completed by November, and the life-saving cleanup must begin. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me ask one quick question. You touched on the lifetime of some of these power plants that some have been around for a long time, and one of the concerns we've had raised to us is that it might not be a good use of dollars to control plants that are very old and may well be retiring soon. Does ALA have a perspective on that?
Well, I think that individual companies can make a decision whether they want to invest and modernize their facility by installing modern pollution control or shut that plant down and then either develop new power generation or seek power generation on the grid. So the Lung Association thinks that we should maximize the pollution reduction from the power sector, and that's a combination of shutting down the oldest, dirtiest plants, cleaning up the plants that are going to continue to operate, and developing new, clean, efficient generation.
Thank you. Mr. Banford.
Good morning. I am James W. Banford, Jr., and I'm here on behalf of the members of Boilermakers Local 13 and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. Our members are concerned that EPA's proposed rules for maximum achievable control technology at new and existing coal-based generating units could lead to tens of thousands of job losses at utility plants, coal mines, and in the rail sector. Our members' livelihoods depend upon the construction and maintenance of coal-fired power plants. The proposed new source emission limits will not allow any new coal plants to be constructed. because no single unit could meet all of the proposed emission limits. The new source limits are based on emission data from many different coal plants with widely varying fuel and pollution control characteristics. We are skeptical about the job analysis. We are skeptical about your job analysis. We agree that thousands of construction jobs will be created, but believe the agency is underestimating the loss of permanent jobs if hundreds of coal plants close and utilities switch to natural gas. The United Mine Workers of America has estimated that more than 50,000 direct jobs are at risk in the coal, transportation, and utility sectors. If 300 workers lose their jobs at a coal plant, the new jobs created at a natural gas plant would make up only a small fraction of the losses. Community impacts such as loss of tax bases and support for local school systems need to be addressed in EPA's analyses. We support the construction of control technologies to enable coal to be burned cleanly, but requiring multiple new emission standards for many older plants will drive investments away from these plants and their workers. A major concern with this rule is its 36-month compliance timeframe as set by Section 112 of the Clean Air Act. We urge EPA to provide an across-the-board extension of at least 1 year, as it did for the marine maximum achievable control technology rule. More plants will be shut down and more jobs lost with a short 3-year timetable impacting more than 1,000 units. I just want to thank everybody for taking the time and opportunity to comment. Thank you.
I want to thank you for coming, and I do want to make one comment in response to that, because, of course, the jobs issues, especially during these economic times, are very important to us. And your suggestion that maybe there needs to be an additional year is something we have been looking at. In fact, when the rule was proposed, Administrator Jackson commented on that, that under the Clean Air Act, states have the ability, where warranted, to provide an additional year for sources to comply, and she said that we would be working closely with the states to help them figure out where that is needed in order to achieve the results you're talking about. So we will be looking at that further as we proceed towards completing the rule, and thank you for flagging that issue for us.
Thank you.
Thanks. Next two witnesses are Puni Saberi from the Sierra Club and Doug Keith, also from the Sierra Club.
Good morning. My name is Puni Saberi, and I'm a physician at the University of Pennsylvania. I practice in a full-spectrum family medicine health center in West Philadelphia. I see newborns, children, as well as pregnant women. We always advise our pregnant women to take their prenatal vitamins and eat food that are high in omega-3 fatty acids. Why? Because omega-3 fatty acids help with brain formation in the embryo, protect against asthma and allergies, and strengthen the vascular system such as the heart. Who would not want that for their growing baby or themselves? Many of the families I see either receive medical assistance along with food subsidies, or they are uninsured. As you may or may not know, in low-income families, a household of one mother and one child receives a maximum of $80 per week in food subsidies. Tuna is a great source of omega-3 fatty acids, and a 5-ounce can of tuna costs about $1. It's an obvious choice for what seems to be economical and healthy consumption. Other fish also provide these vital fatty acids, but one can of salmon costs more than $2. If you're a family of two living with $80 per week for food, would you be more likely to buy tuna or salmon? Well, if you're like any of my patients, the answer is obviously a can of tuna. There's one big problem with this scenario, and it is called a blatant case of environmental injustice. One can of tuna may have up to 35 times as much mercury as one can of salmon. Mercury, I'm sure I don't need to tell this to this audience, but I will go through it anyway. Mercury accumulates in bodies of water from air pollution from coal-burning power plants. It gets deposited in the tissues of large fish like tuna living in those bodies of water. The fish are then caught and consumed by humans. The accumulation in smaller fish is much less since fish like salmon do not feed the same way. In pregnant women, mercury crosses the placental barrier and then the fetal brain barrier. In the fetal brain, it hinders the message for the correct migration of nerve cells. And because the early brain is much more active, mercury accumulates faster and faster. The mechanism is similar in children's developing nervous system. The effects are unsurprisingly a lifetime of physical and mental damage. In 1924, the deadliness of lead exposure was scientifically documented. And yet, it was not until 1970s, 50 years later, that by enforcing the Clean Air Act, the U.S. government was able to ban lead use in all products. The effects of mercury have been known for at least 20 years, if not longer. This time period is long enough to have a generation of children with learning disabilities and other neurological problems. Is this the fate we are choosing for our future generations? How can we move forward knowing that toxic air emissions harm humans irreversibly? I'm here today to advocate on the behalf of those who cannot do that for themselves. Babies who are not yet born, toddlers too small to speak, and children too young to understand what is happening in their environment. They should not be denied healthy food that has become toxic by air and water pollution from coal-burning power plants. Their families should not have to choose between providing food that they can afford or food that contains less heavy metals. We must create an environment where healthcare professionals and all those agencies involved in providing a healthy future for children can do the right thing. We must recognize that the effects of harmful air emissions ripple all the way to the most vulnerable members of our society. We must act now and support EPA's proposed mercury and air toxics standards. I thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Keith.
Thank you. My name is Doug Keith, and I am a semi-retired history teacher and a member of the Sierra Club. Many years. I remember as a high school student attending the first Earth Day at Fairmont Park, a few miles from here. And in my lifetime, I've been able to see and sense the differences that the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act have made. But I believe that the current proposal to regulate mercury and other toxins addresses an important, if invisible, gap in the current law. I am not a scientist, and I can't speak with any authority about specific levels, but I urge the EPA to follow the science and regulate the power industry for the benefit of society as a whole. I understand that regulations have real economic costs, including to those of jobs, but I also know that industries that pollute and cause harm are generally never in favor of regulations that affect their costs and their profits. Few would argue now that we should return to where we were in 1970 before effective regulation of air and water began. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is because good businesses adapt to new realities. In an efficient economic system, we need to recognize and account for the hidden costs, both economic and human, that toxic air pollution causes. I ask you to do the right thing and adapt these standards as expeditiously as this process permits. Thank you for the opportunity to make this statement, and I must say that being able to be part of this makes me grateful and proud to be a citizen of this country.
Well, thank you for that. I have one question for Dr. Saberi. You said that you treat a number of people, especially children here, and I guess I'd ask whether you've seen a relationship between high pollution episodes that can occur during the course of the year, and the people you have coming in for treatment, do you see evidence that there's a relationship?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the biggest issue is asthma in children, especially in the inner city and especially in the neighborhood that I practice. And there's clearly a much higher rate of hospitalization, for example, from asthma and during the times of the year where there is a higher air pollution.
Okay. Thank you. Are there other questions? Thanks to both of you. Thanks for coming. Next two witnesses are Joy Burgee from the Center for the Celebration of Creation, and I apologize if I messed up the pronunciation, and Kevin Stewart from the American Lung Association.
My name is Joy Burgee, and I serve as Executive Director of the Center for the Celebration of Creation. The center is an interreligious partnership of the Chestnut Hill United Church in Philadelphia. We work with congregations and individuals across the country to encourage people of faith to address the problems of environmental justice. First, let me thank Administrator Jackson and all of you in EPA for coming to Philadelphia and for proposing this strong mercury rule. We encourage its prompt adoption and implementation without any weakening. Mercury is a proven neurotoxin. It's settled science that mercury poses special risks to the developing nervous systems and brains of fetuses and babies. It is deeply disturbing to note that as many as 1 in 6 women of childbearing age in this country have mercury levels in their blood that we know are unsafe for babies, but that the country hasn't yet seen fit to regulate mercury from coal-burning power plants, our largest source of that pollution. Every major faith tradition calls on its followers to protect those at the margins of society who cannot defend themselves. Our babies, born and unborn, certainly need our protection. Now, we hear the claims of those in industry who resist paying for the necessary controls on power plants to stop this mercury pollution. But we also know the cumulative health care costs of treating all the illnesses caused by the mercury pollution, and that those costs far outweigh the cost of the pollution controls. So apart from the ethical issues, it's an economic no-brainer to start controlling mercury pollution. The state of affairs is this. It's immoral that this country should resist controlling toxic mercury pollution from power plants when we know how to control it and we can afford to control it. In fact, we can ill afford not to enact a strong mercury rule. The Center for the Celebration of Creation urges adoption of the mercury rule set forth by Administrator Jackson and the EPA. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Good morning. I thank the hearing panel for your work here today. I am Kevin Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T. I serve as Director of Environmental Health for the American Lung Association of the Mid-Atlantic, and I am representing not only the 3 million people in our 4-state service area who suffer from chronic lung disease, but also the tens of millions more who desire to breathe clean air and so protect their good health. In 1990, a bipartisan Congress and a Republican president amended the Clean Air Act to provide protection to the public from toxic air pollutants. With President Bush's signature, the United States made a promise to itself to clean up the nation's biggest industrial source of these hazardous air pollutants, coal-fired electric power plants. It is a simple promise. It is the promise of air that is clean and healthful to breathe. It is a simple promise, but it has proven hard to achieve. 2 months ago, after a delay of 2 decades, after years of foot-dragging by opponents to avoid having to clean up like all other industries, and after a court decision requiring the EPA to act, the administration took the first step necessary to see that this promise is fulfilled. We are here today to ensure that the administration stays on track to issue a strong final rule. Coal-fired power plants produce more air toxics than any other category of industrial pollution sources. And these pollutants include things that we learned a long time ago are not good for us or our children. Such things as mercury, arsenic, chromium, lead, benzene and formaldehyde, acid gases, dioxins, furans. Breathing these toxins is hazardous to our health. Many are ingested as well. Some of them cause cancer. Some cause birth defects and harm children's brain development. Some cause asthma attacks and exacerbate lung disease. Some cause heart attacks and strokes. And some of these toxic substances kill people. The populations potentially at risk of harm from exposure to HAPs include infants, children and teens under 18, those age 65 and above, persons with asthma, chronic obstructive lung disease, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, persons living in poverty, pregnant women, their developing unborn, persons who work or exercise outdoors, and many others with existing health problems are also at risk. Far from being a small minority, the millions of persons falling into one or more of these high-risk groups together comprise over half the population, and every one of these people is a human being worthy of our attention, a neighbor, a coworker, a friend, a family member, maybe even yourself. Very few of us can avoid exposure to these dangerous air pollutants because over 400 coal-burning power plants operate in 46 states. But exposure to toxic emissions from coal-fired power plants is also an issue of environmental justice. The heaviest burdens fall on those who live closest to the plants. Too often, those are the people who are least able to bear them. These are the people Congress and administrations of both parties have promised to protect. After the power plants install the needed equipment no later than 2016, some 17,000 lives will be saved each year. That bears repeating. 17,000 lives will be saved each year. And that is why this is so important and why we cannot afford any more delays. Equipment that can save those lives is already in place in many power plants. And moreover, the same equipment needed to clean up air toxics also reduces many of the ambient air pollutants we've been battling for decades. Sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, fine particle pollution, the last of which very effectively carries air toxics into the body and is the most deadly air pollutant in its own right. The rule will hold power plants nationwide accountable to the same standards that other industries have been held to for years. The rule would properly reward all those utilities that have already done the right thing by installing stringent controls and would provide regulatory certainty for the power industry going forward. Our nation has waited a long time for the promise of 1990 to be kept. When they become final, the new standards for cleanup will save lives, protect the health of millions of Americans, and finally bring about an action that is 20 years overdue. This must happen. Delay is unacceptable, and we all have a duty to make sure that this promise is kept.
Thank you. Let me ask one question, because I've been struck already this morning by the extent of participation from religious groups and from the environmental justice community, which you also mentioned. And I want to ask one of the future witnesses about the reasons for the environmental justice community in engagement here. But for the religious community, I think of all the rules I've worked on, by far the most extensive participation and interest from the religious community has been associated with this rule. Does that have to do with mercury, or what is it that has caused that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I can speculate. I think the fact that it's such clear science, it's science is not up for grabs. This hurts babies. It hurts children. It's just so clearly, I think, to the faith community, a question of moral responsibility. My speculation is that that's what brings the faith community to the front on this issue.
Thank you. I'll just add one more comment, which is one of the things we have been trying to do, and especially Administrator Jackson has been trying to do, is to bring additional groups into these discussions on rulemakings, and it's one of the reasons for holding hearings like this, and it's just great to see the additional involvement from groups that have not been as much traditionally a part of these discussions. Thank you for coming.
We're
Thanks
to
both
be
of you.
Part of it. Thanks.
Okay, next we have Christine Gould from the Sierra Club and Scott Siegel from the Multi-State Alliance to Promote Clean Energy. That's what I thought. So, Scott, I'll give you an opportunity to introduce yourself appropriately, and sorry about the wrong attribution. But let's start with Christine Gould.
I might take the other
one. Hi, thank you. I'm actually going to read my statement, and I'll be brief, and I also have a statement written from someone else that couldn't be here today. So I promise I won't go over my time. Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Christine Gould, and I'm a New Jersey Beyond Coal representative for the Sierra Club. I'm also a lifelong New Jersey resident. I'm a 32-year-old woman, a fish eater, and I'm also a runner. And in the next few years, I'll be thinking about having children. Just like other future mothers, I want my children to be healthy and happy. I want to protect them from harm and help them develop to the best of my ability. But like other mothers, I need your help. We all need the EPA to protect our children from toxic air pollution emitted by coal and oil power plants, which causes neurological problems and developmental disabilities. We need the EPA to ensure that we can breathe clean air and eat fish without risk of mercury contamination. Growing up, I ate tuna fish every week, twice, even three times sometimes. And recently, I had my hair tested for mercury and was forced to think about the effects that mercury could have on my children. This is something that all young women need to think about. We are encouraged to eat lean protein like tuna fish to stay healthy, but we cannot do that without worrying about potential risks for mercury contamination. The EPA's own estimate is that as many as 1 in 6 women my age are at risk for mercury contamination. We need the EPA to protect us from those risks. They are too severe to ignore. The status quo is not enough for us or for our children. I live in a state that has strict standards limiting mercury pollution, but that state standard is not enough to protect me, and it's not enough to protect other New Jersey residents from toxic air pollution. Power plants to the west of New Jersey produce thousands of pounds of mercury each year. The Genon coal plant sits right across the Delaware River from New Jersey. There was an EPA hearing recently addressing air pollution from that plant that's further evidence that we need federal standards. Traces of mercury can be found in almost all fish, whether they are swimming in the Great Lakes or off the coast of New Jersey. New Jersey state standards are not enough to ensure that the fish we eat are free of dangerous mercury. State standards have helped to limit in-state pollution, but we need this strong federal standard to protect people across the nation. We have been waiting for this protection for far too long. The coal and oil companies have been fighting this standard for years. It's time to end that fight. The proposed air toxics rule will save thousands of lives and millions in public health costs. It will prevent tens of thousands of hospitalizations and missed work days. It will create new high-paying jobs in power plant retrofit and decommissioning. The proposed regulation will protect our children from serious neurological disorders, developmental disabilities, and birth defects. These are benefits that cannot be matched by coal or oil's oil bottom line. That was mine. Thank you. This is from Ada Maria Caldera. Good morning, my name is Ada Maria Caldera. I live a few miles from the Genon coal burner in Portland. This plant has wreaked havoc on the environment for its entire lifespan. Consider DEP statistic on the amount of mercury emitted in 2009, 177.8 pounds. Mercury the size of a dime is capable of poisoning a 25-acre lake. Coal combustion acidifies water, which causes atmospheric elemental mercury to become methylated. Methylated mercury is acutely toxic. Not only does it attack the nervous system, chiefly the brain, but it bioaccumulates in fish. The risk of consuming mercury-contaminated fish is especially high for pregnant women, nursing mothers, and children. The burning of coal is responsible for 65% of the mercury in our air, and incineration of garbage and medical waste contributes the remaining 35%. Across the Delaware from my home in Bangor is Warren County, New Jersey, where Genon's plumes combine with the Covanta Energy garbage incinerator in Oxford. In this vicinity, three bodies of water at least have been documented with high mercury levels over the years. Mountain Lake, a resort community where warnings are posted not to eat fish. Harmony Reservoir, a recreational site which has also been posted. And even the trout-raising waters of the Pequest Fish Hatchery. For over a century, our local farms, trees, and waterways of the Delaware have been receiving an insidious load of mercury. When is enough enough? The Genon plant is long overdue for closure. Please help our valley to be restored by weighing the toll of mercury. How many dimes equals 177.8 pounds? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Siegel.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
All right. Yes.
My name is Scott Siegel, and I'm director of the Electric Reliability Coordinating Council. ERCC is a group of power generating companies that provides reliable and affordable power to millions of households, small businesses, schools, and hospitals. Thanks for letting us talk today. Although only one part of a complex regulatory puzzle, the utility MACT we discussed today would be the most expensive rule in EPA history. Some experts believe that EPA has actually understated its likely costs, but even EPA acknowledges it would impose costs of about $11 billion a year on the U.S. economy. Yet EPA has also gone to great lengths to argue that the benefits of this rule will greatly exceed the costs. Under the requirements of two executive orders on regulatory process, EPA prepared a cost-benefit analysis that it claims demonstrates net savings attributable to the agency's benefits analysis. This is an interesting view. Given that the target of the rule is costly indeed, utility MACT will impact roughly 400,000 megawatts of oil and coal-fired generation. That's about 40% of current available electric capacity in the U.S., 50% of U.S. total electric generation, at a cost of about $300 billion in the next 5 years. Large as these costs are, they are in part based on EPA's assessment of the removal efficiency for mercury, which is, I would remind everybody, the primary target of the proposal. And yet, recent analysis of EPA's data gathering has shown that the agency's contractors allowed statistical transcription errors that overestimated removal efficiencies by a factor of 1,000. EPA has since contended that such large errors are still within its acceptable margin of error for variability. We're disappointed in this view and contend that errors of this sort constitute a basis for reproposal. We also believe that these and other errors, coupled with the general complexity and cost of this proposal, at least justify additional time for the comment period of the proposal to put it on par with other rules the agency has proposed in recent years. But more on cost. According to an analysis of data gathered by ICF International, U.S. employment income is estimated to drop as a result of the proposal by an amount equivalent to the earnings of about 2 to 2.5 million full-time workers. Aren't there workers involved in construction and in placement of new equipment? Certainly. But this estimate includes an estimated increase in offsetting compliance-related employment income equivalent to about 0.2 to 1 million full-time workers in the early years of implementation. Retail electricity prices are estimated to increase by 20 to 25% in certain regions to cover the cost of complying with the new environmental regulations. So how did the agency come to believe that its rule possessed such great advantages as to diminish or ignore these tremendous costs? The agency's sole basis for issuing this proposal is a regulatory determination that then-EPA Administrator Browner made in December of 2000 that it was appropriate and necessary to regulate hazardous air pollutants or HAPs from power plants. This determination was based almost entirely on the administrator's concerns about mercury from coal-fired power plants. It stands to reason, then, that the vast majority of benefits claimed by EPA to justify the proposed rules must be the result of reductions in mercury. But the agency's cost-benefit analysis tells a very different story. In a rule estimated by EPA to cost $11 billion annually, the maximum total benefit of reducing emissions of mercury from this rule, the emissions which serve as the primary basis of this rule, is a one-time benefit of $500,000 to $6.1 million. EPA asserts, however, that the proposal could generate as much benefits as $130 billion. How? It comes almost entirely from reductions in particulate matter. You might find that odd for those of you who've studied the Clean Air Act, because the Maximum Achievable Control Technology program that controls hazardous air pollutants is not a particulate matter program. Nowhere does the EPA explain whether there's a less costly way to achieve these same benefits, which is puzzling because Congress created a whole separate part of the Clean Air Act to deal just with particulate matter, more flexibly and less costly than the Maximum Achievable Control Technology program. Why should this matter to the public? Why should you care? Because EPA is mandated to find the most cost-effective solution for regulatory priorities. You should want them to do that so that there's more regulatory assets available to address other air pollutants as well. The other reason this type of analysis matters is that EPA has already controlled emissions of PM2.5 by setting a national standard, a national ambient air quality standard, under Section 108 of the Clean Air Act. And by the way, in doing that, they said that that standard is adequate to protect public health and welfare with an adequate margin of safety. By not including these benefits that are already achieved by the Clean Air Act in establishing the baseline of how much benefit utility MAC generates, EPA is essentially claiming these same benefits, the 17,000 figure you keep hearing, they're claiming these same benefits a second time. I represent corporations, I admit it. If we did the same thing in our corporate reports, we'd be in a lot of trouble from federal regulators. This is double counting of benefits. For the agency to undertake a proper MAC analysis does not require any gap in the regulation of the power sector. Indeed, by 2015, coal-fueled power plants in the U.S. will have invested as much as $125 billion in advanced control technologies, reducing air emissions substantially under existing programs, despite the demand for electricity from coal having tripled in recent years. But by ignoring substantial costs and double-counting its benefits, the agency has failed to meet the letter and spirit of President Obama and President Clinton's executive orders. With the livelihoods of so many American families on the line, you simply have to do a better job. Thanks.
Thanks. I guess as an economist, I do need to respond to one of the themes of your comments, which is when we do benefit cost analyses, in fact, when anybody does an appropriate cost and benefit analysis, they look at the full set of direct costs and they look at the full set of benefits. And if it turns out, which it is does turn out in this case, that controls on power plants required by this regulation will not only reduce mercury levels and reduce the levels of acid gases, but also help them move closer towards meeting the fine particle standards, which are also important from a health perspective, then those should be included in the benefits, and it's a fortunate outcome of the regulation if we get multiple benefits for the pollution control investments that are made. At least that's the perspective we've put into our analysis, and I should give you a chance to respond to that if you'd like to.
Right. Well, what I would say is the United States Congress and the Environmental Protection Agency has spent millions of dollars implementing its PM2.5 National Ambient Air Quality Standard. As a legal matter and as a policy matter, that reduces particulate matter to a level adequate to protect public health and safety. Not everyone reacts to particulate matter in the same way. There are those individuals who are more uniquely susceptible, and I think we've heard some pretty compelling testimony from folks that are uniquely susceptible. But the PM2.5 NACs is what is the program that is designed to effectively respond to those issues. And to add, to try and jury-rig essentially the MACT program to do the same thing only does so at the expense of affordability and reliability of power, which affects those in society least able to afford it the most. It's like a very regressive form of tax, in the sense that people who live at or near the poverty level or on fixed incomes pay more of their monthly salaries on power, and that is the worst way, that is the most regressive way to wring the last several reductions in PM when you have a perfectly acceptable and, I might add, very effective PM2.5 program. So I would just urge you to not double count the benefits.
And then one other question for Ms. Gould. We've heard testimony before of costs on the order of $3 a month, which is EPA's estimate for the average household. There was one comment this morning that perhaps it could be as high as $7 a month. Do you have a reaction as to whether those sorts of costs are appropriate and acceptable?
I don't think that $3 or $7 a month, at least for me personally, is too much to pay to ensure the protection of my future children. And I'm sure that there are many, many people out there that would feel the same way.
Okay. Other questions? Thanks to both of you. Okay.